You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. Brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the world's finest bookmaker, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary. To celebrate the launch of Nick Luck Daily, Fitzdares have a special sign-up offer that will double your winnings on your first bet up to a £50 stake. Just go to www.fitzdares.com/luck to sign up. Hello, welcome to the show. It's Thursday, August the 27th. It's a bright, sunny morning as I look out of the window here in TW11 with just the merest hint of autumn in the air as I went to collect the paper this morning. As you might expect, in fairness, when the St. Ledger starts to dominate the headlines as it does today, but it's not either of the Derby winners, Santiago or Serpentine, nor is it the runaway Great Voltigeur winner Pile Driver, nor is it the exciting and progressive Hookem dominating the early St. Ledger agenda. No, far from it. It's the welcome news that this historic and prestigious fixture, the oldest classic in the world, will welcome paying spectators to a British racecourse for the first time since March, and on all 4 days of this meeting. This will then be followed up as part of the government's reinstated pilot scheme for sporting events by trial days at Warwick and Newmarket's Cambridgeshire fixture. So, the two major British racing festivals in September will be run before capped crowds. And in a moment, you'll be hearing from David Armstrong, the chief executive of the RCA. Now, I say this cautiously because there could yet be 11th hour government intervention as there was before the intended initial trial at Goodwood. But is it right that we're excited about crowds returning as I welcome Rishi Prasad? Rishi.
Well, Lucky, it's clearly great news. It's probably a little late in the financial day for one or two flat-only racecourses, but I guess it's better late than never. Yeah, racing obviously selected along with football, rugby union, cricket, basketball and speedway to host all these test events from end of August through to September. I think we've been aware of criticism within the sport for the BHA and one or two other organisations, why we as a sport are not pushing the government for more. But I think it's always been important to remember and note that the principal reasons for these test events now going ahead, apart from all the excellent work from the BHA and the RCA, etc., is that the infection rates have leveled off enough to commence or resume the pilot events. And also because, as we now realise, racing as a sport has shown it has the capacity to implement, uphold the protocols that have been recommended and tested to allow us to be in this position. And that's a massive testament to the work done by the BHA, the RCA, the racecourses themselves, and a collective effort from all those who've been part of the resumption of racing. And in times where, especially right now, there's so much criticism going around the sport, especially directed at the BHA and the RCA and racecourses, I think they all deserve a bit of a pat on the back to have racing in this position where we are hopefully going to get back one more step, maybe two steps to normality and something that's desperately needed.
Well, let's hear now from the Chief Executive of the Racecourse Association, David Armstrong.
Well, thanks, Nick, and good morning. It has been hard work, but it's been very satisfying as well to get the successful outcome we did yesterday. I think that's down to the hard work of a number of people on the RCA team, Caroline Davis and Holly Cook, who themselves have been creating a set of brand new protocols for us to operate under, which have been widely praised and accepted by government, which is helpful. And then a lot of hard work done by the individual racecourses who have been selected as part of the pilot process, who had to produce operating plans and risk assessments for approval by DCMS at relatively short notice. So a lot of people have gone, put a lot of work in behind that, and I'd just like to thank all of them, particularly singling out Mark Spencer at ARC and Amy Starkey at Jockey Club, who've put a huge amount of work in, but many others as well.
So this hasn't simply been a case of taking the initial pilot plan for Goodwood, dusting it off and saying, there you go, here it is again.
Not really. I mean, it certainly was very helpful, and it was a starting point that all of those other courses used in their preparations, for sure. But the actual work you need to do to prepare for a fixture with a crowd is different racecourse by racecourse. Calculating the capacities, working out the zones you want to use, the entrance and procedures connected to that, how you're going to manage social distancing, is really quite unique course by course. So each one of them had to go from, not quite from scratch, but from an early start to produce their own version of the operating plan.
And in terms of what it will feel like for the race goer, how much do you think that the Doncaster race goer, for example, on the first day of the St. Ledger fixture, will be able to enjoy themselves as they normally will?
Well, I hope they will enjoy themselves. They'll have food and beverage available to them. They'll have bookmakers available to them. They'll be enjoying as near as possible to a normal race day. Of course, there will be additional checks in connection to some of the test and trace procedures we have to follow. There will be additional requests for washing hands, hand sanitizer, all of these things that we want people to observe carefully. But I hope that racegoers will enter into the spirit of it and actually will enjoy a great day's racing.
What I'm really intrigued in is how this is going to roll forward to something approximating crowds on a daily basis, or I should say spectators on a daily basis, because not every time you open your racecourse to the public do you get what you would call a crowd. But I'm interested in when we might achieve that, in your opinion, if these pilot schemes go well.
Well, there's probably two parts to the answer to that. Firstly is a little bit of explanation about how we chose the racecourses themselves, in that what we've done is to carefully try and choose courses, firstly, in different parts of the country. We have a north, east, west mix, and we would have had an additional pilot at Goodwood this Saturday, which had also been approved by government. But by the time the approvals came through, we felt there wasn't sufficient time to be ready to complete the preparation for another day at Goodwood. That was going to be this Saturday for the celebration mile. So sadly, we couldn't go ahead with that. But if we'd done that, we would have had a north, south, east, west approach, which is one of the reasons I think government supported us. It would also have allowed us to test out the different ownership groups within racecourses. So a jockey club, an ARC, a large independent, and Warwick, all being at a jockey club course, are acting also as the test for the small independent courses. So that we would have been able to do that. And that's part of our preparation. In other words, giving all racecourses or racecourse groups or racecourse representatives the chance to take part or observe how pilots work to be ready for the next stage. And the next stage, according to current government guidelines, is 1st of October is a key date. And on the 1st of October, it is government's hope that we will be able to welcome back crowds in limited numbers, the same as the pilot level, across all sporting venues in England. So that's really important for us, because that would see us be able to bring back limited crowds on every single race day.
But can you see any stumbling block at any race course around the country that means that track A or track B or track C would not be able to participate in that?
I don't think so. I think some of them may look at it in terms of economic viability and question whether it works for them or not. And that's an individual decision for each race course. The greater challenge we face is probably one that's outside our control, really, which is the level of local prevalence of COVID. So as we saw, for example, you know, Leicester or in the Manchester area or Aberdeen in recent weeks, if the level of prevalence rises, it's likely that Public Health England or DCMS would not want us to have spectators at a public gathering, so a racecourse fixture, if you like, whilst that level of prevalence is still very high. So that is a risk we face, even with these new pilots. It's what happened that stopped us with the first Goodwood pilot, and it could happen again. So we might see situations where racecourses want to race with a crowd and aren't able to do so, at least temporarily, because of local prevalence of COVID.
And will racegoers be allowed to use cash across all these venues?
Yes. I mean, racecourses will take an individual approach to what they're doing with particularly food and beverage, and whether they want that to be cashless or not. We think we've been, obviously, as you know, testing out on-course bookmakers over the last week and a half, I think it is now. And there's clear feedback from that there's a preference to at least have the option to use cash for on-course bookmakers. So we would continue with that.
David, thanks so much for your time and best of luck with it.
Thanks, Nick.
Well, I think, Richie, the encouragement I took there from David Armstrong was that if this goes well, there's no reason why from the 1st of October, as Charlie Liverton suggested on this podcast the day before yesterday, we shouldn't have spectators at race meetings on a daily basis.
And that's exactly the position that we want to be in. It's been a long, long wait to get to where we are now. We're hoping that things go well. Obviously, there's always the potential for something to go wrong, perhaps infection rates rise. Who knows about the spikes, where they may come and where they may not. But as long as we are doing what we can do to ensure that everything is in the right spot, we are following all the protocols, we are following all the guidelines, and we are not making any mistakes. And I know that's not perhaps the best way to go about life on a daily basis, is not to make mistakes. But it's so important at this time to just hold the position that we're in. Hopefully, once we get to October, it's some sort of normality and we're back racing with crowds on a daily basis, because without them, we've seen, you and I have been on race courses enough since the presumption of racing to know that it's sometimes been a difficult place to be at.
The one caveat, clearly, was that if race courses don't think that it's financially viable to race, they might not be able to afford to do so, because clearly, if they have to staff a whole race course and they're only capped to a very limited crowd, you don't have to be a brilliant mathematician to work out that the numbers don't work.
It's a very fine line. It is a very fine line that the race courses, that the sport has been treading since the lockdown ensued and crowds were taken away from sporting events. But I think that the most important thing is the fact that we have got ourselves in this position. The financial aspects are probably going to be something that will last a long time. The impact has obviously been pretty stark for a number of race courses, and not just race courses, of course. You know, in the wider context of things, you're talking about individuals who have been forced to give up the sport in some senses. So it almost feels like, you know, we are at the behest of someone else. Well, it is. It doesn't almost feel like, I'll take that away. We are at the behest of what the government wish to do. There's nothing we can do about it. Race courses, people within the sport have to just bite the bullet, because that is the way it is. I'm hoping that this is the first sign of the potential for the green shoots of recovery. But as you say, it's a very fine line in making things pay with regards to how many people can come onto the race course and the balance books.
As regards what we might enjoy on the race course on Town Moor, the St. Ledger is just starting to take some sort of shape, with the likes of the Great Voltigeur winner Pile Driver confirmed for it. Hookham yesterday, we heard, was a most likely runner. I guess it really hinges on which and how many Aidan O'Brien horses run in the race.
As always, it does. I was chatting away to one or two people recently and talking about, obviously, the day of the Solario Stakes, when we recall that Oh So Sharp had won it, and she was the last horse to go on and win the Phillies Triple Crown, and what it would mean to the sport if Love had a go at the Ledger. But that looks extremely unlikely, and that she's obviously going to head to the Arc, and perhaps Santiago would lead the charge for Aidan O'Brien's team. But I don't think we should be, personally, looking at the race, I don't think we should be worried about, you know, the strength of the Banded Oil Challenge, because I think there's some pretty good horses here. And you mentioned two of them, Pile Driver and Hookham. Of that pair, Hookham looks, well, they both look fantastic, but I love the way Hookham moved through his last race. He travels like a good horse. He quickened well against some older horses as well in the Geoffrey Freire. And I think he'd be the one for me at this stage. I think he might have a little bit more stamina than Pile Driver. He's got plenty of speed.
And this season for Sheikh Hamdan Al-Maktoum, as I reflected with Angus Gold yesterday, if you haven't heard yesterday's edition, you can just roll it straight on after this. Talked about a lot of those Shadwell horses, just gets better and better, notwithstanding the great disappointment of Mahatha's retirement.
Yeah, that was a blow. I must admit, when I saw the news yesterday, a little sinking feeling that he's out and he's been retired. But it's what we've become used to in the sport. You know, the moments of great glory and moments of great disappointment. And it's been generally, as you pointed out, a fantastic season for Sheikh Hamdan Al-Maktoum. I loved the comments from Marcus Trigoni, because I interviewed him after Mahatha's success in the Sussex Stakes a couple of weeks later. I think I interviewed him the day of the Jacques Le Malroy, when Palace Pier won, and I asked him about whether he'd be scared on that day, or whether he'd, what did he think about a clash between Mahathir and Palace Bear? And he said, doesn't bother him. He thinks Mahathir will win. He's the best miler. and he obviously in the quotes in the paper today, he was quite adamant that nothing would beat Mahathir if he was at his best. In fairness, the Sussex Stakes kind of back that up in the way he overcame adversity in running and sprinted away from a high class field. Obviously, the Cameco run will always lead people to think where he would have finished. But Mahathir was outstanding. And despite, you know, do you remember when Nayef had that blip in his 3-year-old career and he brought him back? And people wondered, why didn't you have a go in the middle of the season? He said, look, I'm just going to draw stumps, take him away and come back. And his ability to get horses to come back after a layoff, like Mahathir did after running in the Greenham as a 3-year-old and then brought him back. And he's so talented, Marcus Stragoning, such a talented trainer. He's brilliant. And I just hope that the legacy of Mahathir's career is going to be a regular return to the big time for Marcus Stragoning.
Fingers crossed. And he's got some exciting 2-year-olds to go to war with as well. Just in terms of that miling division, Frankie Dettori has pointed out in a column that he wrote that he's still strong with Palace Pier at the top of it. He also has pointed out in the same column that he feels that Love, his main rival in the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe, deserves to be favourite. As somebody pointed out, is this straight out of the John Gosden managing expectations playbook as far as Enable's concerned?
I think so. I think that's spot on. It really is. I'm pretty certain that they'll be pretty confident about the chances of Enable. John Gosden has become known for his ability to take the pressure off the team by pointing out the talents of their worthy adversaries. And in fairness, there'll be a lot of people who say Dettori's right. Love is, with her set, the £7 she'll get from Enable, she is she's the horse with a favourite chance. But I don't think Frankie Dettori will go in there thinking, right, I'm worried about Love. I think he might use her to track her through, you know, the way he rides races. He might think, right, well, I'm going to follow Ryan, or Ryan might think I'm going to follow him. It makes for a fascinating race regardless. And no matter what we talk about, no matter what Frankie talks about, all I want to see is what I want to ensure that they get there and they lock horns. I think if I had to choose right now, I'd stick with Love. I think she's been exceptional this season. Maybe that the Forbes isn't that great, but she's won by her three group ones by almost 20 lengths in total this season. If I had to choose, it'd be her. What about you?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I was fascinated by Angus Gold's comments yesterday about Rabia, the 3-year-old filly trained by Jean-Claude Rouget, a home trained 3-year-old filly that's very talented and has a turn of foot and has experience on the track. Is quite hard to resist at big, big odds. And I think if I was having a bet right now, I would be quite interested in that, for all that she's got unbelievably talented opponents to take on. I don't think Love wants soft ground. I think that would be a major issue. Clearly, you know, Enable's got monstrous talent remaining, but it's a massive ask for her to go back there for a fourth time. And I quite like, if you're gonna ask me for young blood, I quite like that the idea of Rabia at a bit of a price at the moment. But a lot of this, Rishi, is contingent on whether or not Gayath turns up in the race. I spoke to Charlie Appleby today. He confirmed to me that Gayath was in good form, had come out of the race really well, and now they've got some decisions to make, which they still haven't made. And one race would come into consideration as the Irish Champion Stakes, but Richie Forrestal's written in the Racing Post, say Ireland closed for business. You can't get a jockey over to Ireland, so that might scupper that plan. Do they then go for the Arc or the British Champion Stakes? And then they might be looking at the Breeders' Cup if they can get him there.
Yeah, if they were to send Gayath to the Irish Champion, it's at a crucial time of the season to rule out whether they send William Buick or James Doyle. It'll be a crucial time to rule one of them out for a period of time. So, yeah, probably one of the less likely options, though you never know. I personally would love to see him run in the Arc. I don't know, people are saying, well, he's shown his best form at 10 furlongs, but he's shown some pretty smart form over a mile and a half. You know, that Coronation Cup success at Newmarket, the times were pretty good. And, you know, he won that Group 1 in Germany by a country mile. I'd love to see him run in the arc. And then I think you've already pointed out to me in previous conversations that we've had about the gaps between races and then the gap between the arc and the Breeders' Cup. Godolphin and Charlie Appleby in particular have had an excellent strike rate and record at the Breeders' Cup. So it would be fascinating to see him go for the arc and then win, lose or draw. They could have a crack at something at the Breeders' Cup. Which race at the Breeders' Cup would also be extremely interesting, whether they'd go for the familiar surface of turf or try something different on the dirt.
Try something different, I hope.
100%. That's what I'd love to see.
Well, one man who certainly tried something a little bit different is British jumps jockey Tom Garner, who has been based in America for the last few summers. And this time around, when finding himself in the United States just before lockdown came, decided it would be the best manoeuvre for his career to stay there. So he did, and to some significant result. He's ridden a flurry of winners. He's also been successful in the Grade 1 Turf Writers at Saratoga, a hugely prestigious prize on Rashaan, showing great skill and guile in the saddle. But he's come to more prominence, as you'll know, because you'll have read the story or seen it on Fox News or Good Morning America, as being part of a group who rescued a stranded family in a flooded car in the flash floods that hit about 3 weeks ago. And I've been catching up with Tom, and with all that and his excitements in the saddle, I put it to him that he must have had an awful lot of attention in the last few weeks.
Yeah, I have, to be fair. I think the Racing Post got hold of it not so long after the news articles on Fox News and Good Morning America came out, and then Sky Sports got hold of it. So, yeah, I definitely had a bit of attention from the English media afterwards.
How have you found it? Has it sort of changed anything for you?
No, not really. You looked at it after the day after and thought that it's pretty lucky. I didn't think much of it at the time, and then when you actually watch the videos and the stuff back, you didn't realise how dangerous it was, and it changes your aspect and look on life, and just like I said on the Sky Sports, it was just glad everyone was all right. So yeah, no, it definitely changed my look on it.
And what's been the reaction from your fellow riders back home?
They took a few just banter on a few WhatsApp groups. Just every time I speak to them, they call me a hero and stuff, just taking the mic. But not a heap load. But a few nice messages from them anyway.
And whilst I wanted to obviously pay tribute to your life-saving heroics, I wanted to talk to you about how your career's been going this summer in the States. Just tell us first of all about the decision to sort of stay there when lockdown started.
Well, obviously following on from a good year last year where I had two Grade 1 winners up at Saratoga with Winston C, I came back here literally the Monday after Cheltenham because it wasn't looking great for racing over there after Cheltenham, and we were actually meant to run the following week over here, and it wasn't called off until I actually landed in the country. And the potential of racing starting back here was a lot more, well, it was looking a lot more positive than it was racing resuming back in England. So I decided to stay. We got back racing actually in May. June, when England was 1st of July. So we had I think we had 20 races in June, which I had three winners. Should have been four. I actually took the wrong course, unfortunately, on one. So it was a good time, and I could have had a little bit more luck, but it was better staying here for the lockdown than returning to the UK anyway. And then obviously the summer in Saratoga has gone well. I rode another winner, the Turf Writers, which is a Grade 1 up there, on a horse called Rashaan last week. So things have been going all right. And hopefully it'll continue for the fall.
And will we ever see you back riding in the UK, or is that it now? Are you a fully fledged American?
No, of course I'll be back. The seasons do overlap a little bit. They start in March and end in November. So if it finished a little bit earlier in, say, October, it helped me a little bit. But I'll be definitely back for the start of November for the English season. I'm concentrating on both. I'm concentrating on coming back and trying to do as well as I can in the UK.
And obviously this will have helped raise your profile a little bit over the last few weeks. Do you find that riding at the top level in the States, albeit that it's not as big a sport as it is here, but do you find riding steeplechasing at the top level in the States and winning grade ones gives you a lot of confidence when you come back?
Oh, definitely. Even if I wasn't in the grade ones, I'm still riding throughout the summer, which I wouldn't be because of the people I ride for in England. And I'm riding nice horses in nice races and getting the publicity as well to go with it, so it does give you confidence, especially like last year and this year, where I've had top level success. It's definitely helped my confidence going back. People say it's not as good, but you need a special type of horse. So a lot of the grade one horses in England couldn't win over here because of just completely different conditions. So there's a lot of differences to the grade one horses, so I wouldn't take anything away from it over here, and it does give you the confidence to go back and try and ride at that top level at home.
And where's home for you in the States?
I'm based in Pennsylvania, so I'm about 2 hours south, of New York, about 40 minutes outside Philadelphia, and about 2 hours north of Washington. So yeah, I'm not too far from anywhere, really. It's a nice area.
And how's it been for you during this period?
It's good. We're out, all this, obviously, all the pandemic going on, we're quite out of the stick, so I haven't really seen a lot of it, like any sort of lockdown issues recently, but we were the Americans took it very seriously when it all kicked off, so I was definitely in a good place where I was still able to continue riding out and earning some money, so I was definitely in a better place than I would be if I was at home. I'm definitely happy of the area I'm in.
And where are you headed now?
I'm actually on the way back from Saratoga. I'm heading back home, so yeah, I'll be riding out tomorrow. But yeah, I was up to Saratoga for the one race today,
and
unsuccessful, unfortunately.
Well, it's always worth heading to the Spa, particularly when you've got a chance of riding a winner or two, and you've been riding plenty. Tom, thanks for talking to me. Best of luck.
No, thanks, Nick. Cheers.
So as we bid you farewell on this Thursday morning, it's time for Rishi Prasad to give you a winner. Rishi.
The Beverly Bullet Lucky today.
Love it.
And the Grey, a horse that you can't help but love the way he races, Major Jumbo. There are a few horses in the race that I think a lot of people will feel close to for whatever reason, whether it be Dakota Gold or the lovely three-year-old filly Keep Busy. But I'm going for Major Jumbo. Now that Caspian Prince is out of the race, Major Jumbo with the first-time blinkers, a little bit of cut in the ground. He's had some pretty good form this season. I'm going to take a chance that the first-time blinkers make the difference and Kevin Stock can get him home. Brilliant season, by the way, for Kevin Stock.
Fantastic season for him. It's been another great season for you, I might say.
Thanks to this regular appearance on the Nick Luck Daily podcast.
And many other appearances. Rishi Prasad. And we will be back tomorrow to do it all over again. Thank you very much for listening. Please do give us a rating, review us, subscribe on SoundCloud, Spotify, iTunes, and Google. And we will see you on Friday. That was Thursday, August the 27th. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with FitzDares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.